fills up our plates. Papa's saying grace. Louisiana living sweet as sugar.
Welcome to the Story Table, brought to you by Providence Church in Lake Providence, Louisiana, where they want you to know that you are loved. Sierra Story, Chapter 9. Sonny was glad to be cutting beans. He had spent most of yesterday broken down, and he was already late getting this last field of beans out. He had planted this Group 8 variety behind last year's wheat crop. They were so late, he wouldn't be planting any winter crop behind them. Sonny had been careful to earmark these acres for the government incentive program available for ground that was laid by. Sonny resented having to juggle his acreage and the crops he chose to plant just to please the suits in Washington. It was the Fed's way of trying to control the commodities, supposedly to help the market. Sonny didn't think much of anything the government did help the market. If they really wanted to help, they would quit restricting the amount of commodities U.S. farmers could export, while at the same time allowing imports from foreign competitors who didn't have half of the labor and fuel costs the American farmer did. Sonny didn't farm because he was stuck in farming, although a lot of his friends did. Sure, it would be difficult to get out, but he could do it. No, Sonny loved farming. It was just getting more and more difficult to make a living doing it. The cost to produce his crops kept rising, and the price he could expect for them kept falling. Even an optimist would wonder if anyone in Washington really had the farmers' interest at heart. It looked more like they were trying to run everyone out of business. "Son of a gun," Sonny muttered. He turned out the big red combine and climbed down the ladder to the field. The auger was choked up again. Sonny thought about his friend's little boy as he took his hands and began to pull out the balled-up grain that had stopped the auger from turning. It was hard not to think about Neil and the accident that could have taken the boy's life when he was facing a combine. An auger is a large rotating cylinder that forces the grain into the belly of the combine. Surrounding it is a large wheel with spikes that look like pitchforks, whose purpose is to grab the plant and push it toward the turning cylinder. Below the auger, large plates of steel blades scissor back and forth to cut the plants down at their base. It was hard to imagine a child being caught in such a machine and living. But that's what happened to Al's son. The child was only 2 at the time. Al was working on his combine under the shed behind his house. He thought Neil was inside with his mother. His mother thought Neil was inside, too. Neil went outside. Al heard the combine choke down, the same sound Sonny had heard moments ago. Al said later that he knew immediately what had happened. Al, Sonny, and several of the other men used a homemade shield to keep the sparks and flames off the little boy while they cut the machine away from his body with a blowtorch. The ambulance finally arrived and took Neil away. The little boy was in a full body cast for months, but he survived against all odds. When he got a little better, his daddy made him a little dolly to get around on, similar to the type mechanics use to roll under cars. For months, Neil lay on his belly and used his hands to roll himself around. Sonny fished out the remainder of the grain and climbed back up to the cab of his combine. He had often wondered why Al's son had survived such a freak accident and Brandon had not, though he had always been too ashamed to voice such a thought to Sierra. The combine roared back to life, and Sonny was back in business. Sonny enjoyed combining. He knew a lot of people wouldn't understand that. Yeah, it could be monotonous and draining, but along with those things came a sweet solitude. He enjoyed being alone with his thoughts while he watched the fruit of a lot of his hard labor collect behind him in the bin of the big machine. It was only depressing when he had to make too many trips up and down the field before enough grain accumulated to dump. Today, Sonny was in a good mood. The bin was filling up quickly. It was shaping up to be a good year, all in all. His rice had done really well, and even the wheat he had to replant had turned into a nice strong stand. Now, if only he could wait out the market. The prices really needed to move if he was to have a chance at any profit to speak of once the crop loan was paid off. If ever Sonny needed a good year, this was it. He tried not to worry about the future, but the kids were about to go to college, and although they had academic scholarships, he couldn't see how he was going to be able to pay for all the things it didn't cover. Sonny had no aspirations of being rich so he could buy cars and boats and take fancy vacations. He wanted to make enough money to help his kids through college and give Sierra the kind of life she deserved. Sonny's thoughts turned to his wife and how hard she worked at the nursery. He was so proud of her. She had built Cece's from scratch 7 years ago, struggling to break even for the first couple of years and then finally beginning to show a little profit. To make it through the winter, she had continued to add seasonal items until her little place had become a regular stop for tourists during the holiday season. Still, as proud as he was, at the same time it bothered him that they were dependent on the second income. He knew his ideas were old school, but he couldn't help it. He hated it when she came home tired and blistered from the sun. For that reason, as often as possible, he showed up to help. Unfortunately, because of his own load, that wasn't very often. The twins helped too when they could, but she really needed to hire an extra pair of hands. Maybe if he got a good price for the rice, he could help her swing it. While Sonny was thinking about Sierra, a steel gray Yukon pulled in off the highway and parked in the tall grass next to the field. Sonny recognized the guy from next door, the rider fellow. Wonder what he wants, Sonny thought to himself. When he got to the end of the field, he parked the machine and climbed back down. He hated to stop because time was valuable, but he didn't want to be unneighborly. Hi, Charles greeted Sonny, offering him his hand. Sonny took it and shook it firmly. Hello again. You settling in over there? You bet. Listen, I appreciate your stopping, but I know you're really busy, so I'll get right to the point. I want to put a bug in your ear, so to speak, and that's a new one for me. Heard it today at the coffee shop. I told you I was a political columnist and that I was in town on assignment. Charles paused just long enough for Sonny to respond. Yeah, I believe you did. Well, I didn't get a chance to tell you any more, but the thing is, I'm here to do an article on the state of agriculture from the farmer's viewpoint. My instincts tell me you'd be a good interview. You think we could get together sometime soon? You probably have a few things to get off your chest, and I could use the material. What do you say? I don't know how good an interview I could give you, Charles, but I wouldn't mind getting on my soapbox with a captive audience for a change. Listen, Sierra and I have been meaning to have you over for supper. How about tomorrow night? We could talk afterwards. Charles looked surprised. Are you sure? Maybe you should ask your wife and get back to me, he said. Heck no. Sonny slapped Charles on the back and started back towards the combine. Sierra loves company. She'll be happy to have you. We normally eat around 7. See you then. Charles watched Sonny turn the monstrous machine around and lower the big rotating wheel to the ground. That was almost too easy, he said to himself. He tried to feel ashamed, but he couldn't. He did what? Judy was practically hollering into the phone. You heard me, Sierra responded. Her voice was flat. What in the world am I supposed to do now? Judy was as dramatic as ever. I don't know, but you can't have the jerk over for supper. And just how am I supposed to get out of it? How should I know, Cece? Run away from home. Fake a trip to the hospital. And this is tonight? You better figure something out quickly. You're a lot of help, Sierra complained. Hey, I've got an idea. Uh-oh. I don't know if I like the sound of that. Oh, stop it, Sierra pleaded. Why don't you and Robert and David come over, too? We can make it sort of like, you know, a block party. It'd make it so much easier. Judy giggled. Please, Sierra exhorted her friend. Oh, no need to beg, Judy stopped chortling long enough to answer. We're there. I wouldn't miss it. You know I find hurricanes and natural disasters exhilarating. This ought to be better than the Weather Channel. I hate you, Judy. You know that. Judy made a kissing sound over the phone. I hate you too, she said sweetly. Oh, and I'll bring dessert. Otherwise, you'd just serve some of that fat-free cardboard. Bye, Judy. Bye, Sierra. Sierra closed the shop early that evening to come home and tidy up the house. She was in the kitchen browning hamburger meat when she thought she heard the doorbell. It sounded like the front door. Oh, surely not, she said to herself. He wouldn't have the audacity to come this early. He knows no one else is here. I know Sonny told him 7. She turned the fire down to low and put a lid over the meat, smoothing her hair on the way to the door. Strange, she couldn't even see an outline of her guest through the oval glass. Sierra opened the door and looked around. She didn't see anyone. She was about to shut the door when she heard a four-wheeler crank up. She stepped out onto the porch and looked towards the noise. Trey? He was turning his ATV around. Trey and Brandon had been best friends. Sierra had practically raised the boy for years, but since Brandon died, she had scarcely had more than a passing conversation with him when their paths crossed. She was tempted not to call to him at first, but something compelled her. She raised her arms and waved, yelling above the roar of the motor. The young boy saw her out of the corner of his eye. He killed the engine and picked up something from the basket on his handlebars. "Hi, Trey," Sierra called to him as enthusiastically as possible. "Hi, Miss Sierra," Trey murmured, his voice almost inaudible. He looked awkward and vulnerable walking towards her. Sierra made herself move to greet him as he neared the porch. She reached to give him a quick hug and found she couldn't let go, surprised at how good it felt to hold him. Right at first, his young body was stiff. Then he softened and relaxed in her arms, though whatever he was holding pressed sharply into her stomach. Sierra was shocked at how much Trey had grown. It was hard to believe his curly head was even with her own and that she didn't have to bend down to reach him. They stayed that way for a long moment. Finally, she squeezed him hard and let go. "What a nice surprise," Sierra said, wiping at her eyes. "I'm glad I caught you. Where were you going anyway?" She took a breath, and Trey followed her obediently into the house. Now that he was here, he couldn't decide what to say. He was glad when she kept right on talking. "Let's go out to the kitchen," she said pleasantly. "I'll check on my hamburger meat and get us something to drink." Sierra's thoughts tripped over each other in her head while she stirred the meat. She tried to act natural when the truth was being in the same room with Trey was bringing back powerful feelings that she had rather keep buried. Trey was standing just inside the room, fidgeting with whatever it was he had brought with him. She poured 2 glasses of lemonade while she made small talk, then she motioned him towards the bar stools. "So," Sierra started. "I wanted," Trey said. They both stopped and smiled nervously. Sierra motioned for Trey to go first. "I wanted to come by and see you, Miss Sierra. I've wanted to for a long time." Sierra couldn't believe how mature he sounded, like a little man. He looked up and met her gaze. "I'm sorry I was leaving," he apologized sincerely. "After I rang the doorbell, I kind of got scared." Something about his expression reminded Sierra of the little boy Trey she remembered. "Now that's silly," she whispered gently. "You used to practically live here." "It's good to see you, Trey." "Thank you, ma'am, Miss Sierra." Trey paused and took a deep breath. When he spoke again, his voice was high-pitched and wavering. She could tell he was trying to hold back tears. "I miss him, Miss Sierra. I do. I know it was just a little boy, but he was the best friend I ever had. I won't ever forget him." Sierra felt a hairline crack creep across the glacier she carried around Brandon's memory. Trey wasn't through. "I haven't ever told this to anyone." Trey slowly began to lose the battle against his emotions. He put the little gift bag he had brought with him on the bar and wiped fiercely at his eyes. "It's okay," Sierra said compassionately. "Go on." She put a hand on his for support. "No, it's not," he said resolutely. "But I have to tell you." "You have to know." Trey gulped. He looked like someone facing a firing squad. Tears began to slip down his cheeks. Sierra patted his hand silently, wondering why she was holding her breath. When he spoke again, it was hard to make out his choked-up voice. "It was my fault. I did it." His face was twisted in guilt. "It's my fault he died." He stared at his jeans. "I told him to hide on the dock. We were going to play war. The other guys weren't listening, but I told him to hide on the dock like the boathouse was the fort. And we would..." His voice grew softer and she strained to hear him. "I told him we would attack at dawn." "Trey." "He didn't want to, because Mama, she had said to stay off the dock. But I told him she wouldn't know he was there.
And then some of the boys wanted to go find him early, but I made them wait. Don't you see? I made them all wait. Trey started to heave now, his shoulders shaking with the force of his emotions. I should stop him, Sierra thought. But when she spoke, her voice sounded foreign, like it belonged to someone else. It wasn't your fault, she said woodenly. That's not all. Sierra could barely hear him now. I never told anyone that he was hiding on the dock. The whole time they were looking for him, I didn't tell anyone. Trey practically moaned. I was afraid I'd be in trouble for telling him to hide there after Mama said not to. If I hadn't told him. A large piece of ice slipped off Sierra's melting heart, followed by another and then another. It wasn't your fault, Trey. It wasn't anyone's fault. Sierra stood up and wrapped her arms around the sobbing boy's shoulders. They cried together for a while, and then she whispered gently, I have a secret, too. Trey's muffled voice was close to her ear. You do? Yes, I do. Suddenly, Sierra wanted nothing more than to tell him. I could have stopped it, too. Trey looked up at her then. His eyes were solid red and swollen. You could have? He asked in disbelief. Yes, I could have, Trey. I knew something was wrong all day. I felt it. I even thought about taking him home early from your party. But I felt stupid because I didn't have a really good reason. But if I had... Sierra's voice trailed off. But it's not your fault, Miss Sierra. You couldn't have known. Sierra sat back down and took Trey's hands in hers. And neither could you. You were just being an 8-year-old boy. It wasn't your fault either. It wasn't anyone's fault. Sierra knew she was talking to herself as much as she was to Trey. It wasn't her fault. I don't know why it happened, Trey. None of us do. Maybe we never will. But we loved him, and he knew that, and we had him for a little while. Right now, that's got to be enough. Sierra knew it sounded trite, but she didn't know what else to say, and it seemed to be enough for the time being. Can I? She nodded towards the bag sitting on the bar between them. Yes'm. Trey's voice was almost reverential. He carefully handed it to her as if it was a great treasure. Sierra untied the ribbon joining the handles of the bag and pulled out a small silver frame. It was the last picture we made together, Trey offered. Brandon smiled up at her from the back of a big green alligator. He had the enemy by the head and the tail, clearly getting the better of the plastic reptile. Trey was in the water beside Brandon, holding on to one of the alligator's hind feet. Both boys were laughing and smiling ear to ear. Sierra held the frame and waited anxiously for the inevitable. For the last 5 years, every picture of her son she had ever seen had produced a second morbid photo in her head, Sonny holding a limp Brandon in his arms. For once, the memory didn't come easily. This time she had to bring it back on purpose. And even then it faded out quickly and she was looking again at the smiling 8-year-olds. Thank you, Trey. She smiled at him and set the frame on the counter by the one of Luke and Lolly last Christmas. It fit perfectly. I would have given it to you sooner, Trey said, but I didn't know if it would, you know, be a bad thing. Sierra hugged the young man again. Your timing is perfect, Trey. It's not a bad thing. It's really a very good thing. I'm glad you came. More than that, Sierra was glad that she meant it. And she knew she had actually meant it. Sierra checked her watch as she waved Trey off. She panicked and called Judy with an SOS. I need help, she implored. Can't explain right now, but I got tied up. Can you come over early and help me get supper on? You sound funny, Cece. You been crying? Sierra cut her off. Yes, I have, but I'm okay. Can you help? How far are you? Judy asked. Not very far, Sierra admitted. I was planning to serve several different Mexican dishes. All I have so far is partially browned hamburger meat. Judy laughed. Girl, it's 6:15. You are late. But never fear, you called the right girl. I have 8 dozen hot tamales in the freezer and a frozen enchilada casserole. Oh, Judy. Hush, you can thank me later. Go ahead and brown that meat. Can you put together your famous taco soup? Yeah, but...
Nothing stirred Judy up like being in charge. But nothing. Get the soup on and start washing some lettuce. The cavalry's coming. By the time Lolly got home from basketball practice at 6:30, the soup was bubbling and Sierra was grating cheese for a salad. The aroma of fresh coffee filled the room. She kissed her mom's cheek and took a cold canned drink out of the fridge. "Luke and David will be right behind me," she said. "The boys and girls shared the gym today. Practice was easy. Daddy's driving up. He's in early. The coaches had to go to a rules meeting. Did I say that already?" "I don't know," Sierra said, laughing. "It's hard to keep up with you. Wonder how quick you could bathe and come back down to set the table." "As quickly as I wanted to," Lolly grinned mischievously. Sierra tried to look stern, then "want to." "Yes, ma'am, ma'am." Sierra wrinkled up her brow. She watched Lolly take the stairs two at a time. That's the best mood she's been in for weeks. I wonder what gives there. Just then, a second vehicle arrived. There was a lot of laughing outside. The back door opened, and Sonny, Luke, and David stumbled in, all three still chuckling. "Hey, everybody," Sierra smiled at the three of them. "What's so funny?" "Don't ask," Sonny said, pecking her on the cheek. "These two are warped." "What?" Luke asked innocently. "Mom, I told David he could just shower over here." Sierra feigned annoyance. "Fine," she pouted. "Don't tell me." "Of course you can shower here, David. Luke will find you some shorts or something." "Yeah, well, I'll try, but he'll probably have to wear something of Lolly's. I don't have anything for midgets." Luke propped his arm on the top of the younger boy's head, dodging the elbow David threw in retaliation. "Yoo-hoo, we're here!" Judy's voice carried from the back door into the kitchen. "Come on in," Sierra called. She shoved Luke and David toward the stairs. "You two clowns go shower. You stink." Judy and Robert rounded the corner, exchanging greetings with the boys who were halfway up the stairs. Judy was carrying her purse, and Robert was laden down with dishes. "Well, my goodness," said Sonny. "Judy," Sierra exclaimed, "did you bring your whole freezer?" Robert laughed, causing his slightly round stomach to jiggle and his eyes to crinkle into two slits. "Hey, Sierra," Robert said. "Hey, Sonny." Judy narrowed her eyes at her husband in mock anger. "For heaven's sakes, don't give him any encouragement. He's been picking at me the whole way over. Besides," she said, defending herself, "my mother always said you can't ever have too much food or too much money." Judy grinned at her husband wickedly. There was another line about too much sex, but I can't ever remember that one. It was Robert's turn to grimace. "You can say that again." Sonny and Robert laughed together. "Let me help you with that," Sonny said, reaching to lighten Robert's load, even as Judy swiped at him playfully with her purse. "Watch it," he said. "You're going to make me drop all this stuff on Sierra's clean floor." Judy and Sierra poured the two men a cup of coffee and ushered them into the living room, where they sank gratefully into the leather couches. Robert had jumped in the shower before they came. Sonny meant to try and catch a hot one after the guys, and if he didn't, well, it wouldn't be the first time he'd had supper in his work clothes. He figured the city boy would have to understand. As it was, he had plenty of time to clean up. Charles was almost 7:30 arriving. Sierra and Judy had warmed up the enchiladas and the hot tamales. They had sliced Judy's lemon icebox pies and put them in the refrigerator, tossed the salad and browned the French bread. Lolly had set the table and filled the glasses with ice. Although everyone was sitting in the living room having a good time, Sierra was fuming inside. She was adding tardiness to the list of grievances she held against Charles when the doorbell rang. "I'll get it," Lolly offered. All things considered, Sierra thought, it's going pretty well. Everyone was crowded around the dining room table, the conversation flowing as freely as the food. Most of it was centered around farming or the upcoming basketball season. Sierra wasn't surprised at how knowledgeable Charles seemed to be about both. He had always prided himself on being able to talk on any subject. Sierra had begun to breathe easy when Charles upped the ante. Addressing Sonny, he asked, "Did Sierra tell you that we've met before?" Sierra inhaled sharply. She cleared her throat quickly to cut him off and rose to the challenge. "I don't think I did I, Sonny? It didn't seem that important. Mr. Carpenter came by the shop earlier to pick up some ferns." Sierra felt the color was draining from her face while she fought for a plausible story. "While he was there, we realized we had both went to the same college. Of course, that was before I switched to state." Sierra took a breath and topped that whopper off with another one. I thought he looked familiar when I saw him at the game. Cool, said Luke, helping himself to another bowl of soup. Judy was looking at Sierra in total shock. The woman was digging her own grave. She fantasized about accidentally hitting Luke's arms and causing him to spill his soup into Mr. Hot Pants' lap. Isn't it a small world, Judy said. Now, tell me again, Mr. Carpenter. Charles, please. Charles, Judy acknowledged reluctantly. Her voice purred silkily. Do tell us more about yourself. What is it exactly that brought such an important columnist to our little town? I've heard so much, I'm afraid I can't remember. Her tone of voice seemed to go right over the heads of most of the diners, with the exception of Charles and Sierra and Lolly. It wasn't like her Aunt Judy to be so snippy. Judy wasn't really an aunt to Sierra's kids, but they had taken to calling her that when they were little. The young girl looked from her aunt to her mother quizzically. Sierra smiled at Lolly in apparent ignorance. Mr. Carpenter didn't seem to notice either. Well, I am glad you asked, Miss Judy. Charles' tone was polite and friendly. It'll give me a chance to explain to Sonny here just what I'm after. Judy made a loud choking sound at that, and everyone looked at her in concern, except for Sierra, who threw her a glare when no one was watching. Whoa, Judy said, excuse me, that bite went down wrong. Everyone turned his or her attention back to Charles. Well, he said, I've lived in D.C. for 17 years. For most of those years, I've written a column for a political magazine. You might have heard of it, The Washington Players. Everyone at the table smiled respectfully, and a few shrugged their shoulders. We don't read a lot of political magazines around here, Charles, Sierra said. Speaking for myself, I got burned on politicians years ago. Lolly scrutinized her mother's face. There it was again, the same tone Aunt Judy had. What in the world was going on? Charles laughed as if Sierra had cracked a funny joke. I understand. A lot of people feel the same way about Washington. But the truth is, there are a lot of really good people up there. You just have to give them a chance. I'm sure there are, Sonny said, joining in the conversation and smiling at their guest. Now, you were saying, I'm sure all of you are aware of the new farm bill Senator Hill is pushing. Well, a few months ago, my editor decided he wanted to take it on with a fresh new angle. Kind of rural America speaks, you know? Robert had been listening quietly. I don't mean to sound disrespectful, he interjected, but we do know. You see, rural America speaks a lot. It's just that no one's ever listening. Robert's statement elicited a few similar comments. Sierra watched Charles as he worked the table perfectly. He looked so interested and understanding she could almost believe he shared their concerns. I understand, he told the men. That's why I wanted this assignment. I volunteered for it because it means something to me personally. My grandfather was a farmer. I remember listening to him when I was just a little boy. I remember how hard it was for him to make a living, even back then. I know there are some people that have the wrong idea of farmers. Charles shook his head sadly, as if the thought upset him greatly. They think you want the government to give you something for nothing, to subsidize your way of life. I know they're wrong. I want to listen to you and try to accurately represent your feelings. I think I can accomplish something real here, something worthwhile. He had Robert and Sonny's full attention, as well as Luke and David's. Even Lolly looked captivated. Judy raised her eyebrows at Sierra with the look that said, "Is he for real?" That sounds good, Charles, Sonny said. That's a worthy goal you've got there. If we're all through, why don't we men go out to the porch? It's a cool evening. Old Robert here can help me show you a few things from the farmer's perspective. Right, Rob? Right. What about dessert, Judy asked. I brought lemon icebox pies. The men all agreed that dessert sounded wonderful, but they wanted to wait just a little while so they could enjoy it better. They expressed their appreciation to the cooks and excused themselves. Judy offered to make a fresh pot of coffee while Lolly helped her mom clear the table. Luke and David were going to follow the men, but after months of football, their shooting form had looked pretty rusty at practice, so they headed to the carport instead to shoot some extra hoops. Judy waited till Lolly finished clearing the table and went upstairs to do her homework, and then she pounced. "What in the world?" she asked in a dramatic stage whisper. "I thought he looked familiar." "Girl, you are playing with fire."
Sierra looked toward the porch and then back at Judy.
What did you want me to say?
Oh, yeah, Sonny. Did I forget to mention that Charles and I were in love and I thought we were going to get married until he started cheating on me?
Sierra started stacking the plates into the dishwasher.
Now, I don't know, Judy admitted. Okay, I guess you didn't have much choice.
She poured the water into the coffee maker, set the carafe in place, and switched the button to on.
But I'm worried for you. You're getting in deeper and deeper.
Sierra stopped loading the dishes and raised her hands to her head. She began to draw small circular patterns on her temples.
You think I don't know that? She asked quietly.
Her pained voice caused her friend to turn around.
Judy was instantly contrite.
I'm sorry, she said. Is your head hurting again?
Sierra didn't answer. She held onto the counter and looked at the floor.
Cece?
I'm okay, Sierra said finally, opening the cabinet beside the stove and taking out a container of Advil.
She took a glass and poured herself some tap water from the sink, pouring four of the little round pills and following them with a gulp of water.
Four? Judy asked.
Sierra rolled her eyes.
Now you'll be my doctor and my mom?
She smiled weakly as she continued to rub her temples. They're 200 milligrams each. It's safe, Doc.
Maybe. But you need to go to a real doctor. Something's not right.
I agree, Sierra said, but I don't think the doctor can fix what's wrong around here.
No, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your health, smart aleck, and you know it. Please tell me you'll make an appointment tomorrow. If you don't, you know I'll bug you till you do.
Sierra gave her worried friend a hug.
Yes, ma'am, she promised. Now, can we change the subject, please?
Sure, Miss Sierra, Judy imitated Roe perfectly.
What you want to talk about now?
Sonny turned down the bed and crawled between the covers while Sierra was in the bathroom removing her makeup.
Crossing his arms behind his head, he flipped on the local news, hoping he could stay awake to see the weather report. He waited until he heard the water turn off, then he raised his voice slightly to carry into the other room.
Judy said you had another headache tonight.
Thanks, Judy, Sierra said under her breath.
Yeah, I did, but it's fine now. I took a couple of Advil.
Judy said four.
Sierra was pulling her nightgown over her head when she walked into the bedroom.
Judy talks too much, she said.
She sat down on her side and took the clip out of her hair. Sonny enjoyed watching the thick black tresses fall around her shoulders. Sierra's hair had always seemed to grow so fast, he swore you could stand still and see it. Just weeks ago, it had hung right above her collarbone.
Sonny turned off the lamp on his bedside table. Then he leaned up and propped himself on one arm, taking his other hand and kneading Sierra's shoulder blades, pulling her gently down onto his chest.
I won't argue there, but she's right this time, babe. You've been having an awful lot of headaches.
Sierra lay her head on his shoulder, squirming until it fit just right.
I want you to go to the doctor, Cece.
Not you, too. Sierra shifted her head to look at his face.
I said I would.
Soon?
Soon.
How'd your interview go?
Sierra twisted her head back towards the television. There'd been a big earthquake somewhere in South America.
Good. It really did go well. Charles is easy to talk to, and I think he really wanted to hear what I had to say. I thought I'd be nervous, but he made it easy. He says the column should be in the December issue. How about that?
That's nice.
Sierra was totally drained. It felt so good to shut her eyes and lie still.
Hey, Sonny said, so you knew Charles in college? What a coincidence, huh?
Sierra snuggled deeper into her husband's chest.
Yeah, she said softly, whatever you say.
Good night, baby.
I love you.
Her voice trailed off, and she was asleep.
Sonny kissed her forehead, holding his lips to her skin for a few extra moments. He needed to go to sleep as well, but now he was wide awake. He lay there a long time into the night, preoccupied with his own thoughts.
Sonny wasn't the only one stewing in his thoughts that evening. Luke lay in bed watching the numbers transform on his digital clock. His literature notebook lay open beside him. As usual, he had left his writing assignment till the last possible minute. It was due tomorrow morning, and he didn't have a clue how to start. He was supposed to write an essay on one of Miss Stone's brilliant ideas.
If he had to choose to live without laughter, love, or tears, which one would he choose and why?
Dumb, dumb, dumb. How do they come up with this stuff? Lolly probably wrote hers the day it was assigned.
He wondered what she chose and decided it was probably laughter,
She didn't seem to do a lot of it anyway, especially lately. Although she had given Love the boot, too. Luke picked up his pen determinedly. "That lolly tend to lolly," he scolded himself. "You're getting nowhere fast." Luke would have been surprised to know that his sister was sitting at her desk across the hall struggling with the same essay, although she had given it a lot more thought than Luke had. Lolly's problem was different. It was uncharacteristic for her to put an assignment off, but this one made her uneasy. She couldn't treat it with the distance she was able to use with most of her assignment. Love. As much as it hurt to love someone, Lolly couldn't imagine never feeling love again. To go through life without caring deeply about the people around you? Why live at all? No, it would have to be between laughter and tears. Laughter. Lolly knew that people saw her as the serious one and Luke as the clown, but actually, she loved to laugh. Sure, she disliked the superficial giggling a lot of the girls did, but that didn't mean anything was wrong with her sense of humor, did it? And deep down, belly laughing was sort of personal for her. She wasn't that comfortable with it in public. Lolly thought about all the tears she had shed in her life. Tears of grief for Brandon, tears of empathy for her parents, tears of loneliness for Jeff. As much as they had hurt, she knew they had helped her deal with pain and loss. Then there were the sentimental tears and tears of joy she had cried over sweet gestures from people that loved her, or songs and movies that struck a chord in her soul. No tears. She couldn't imagine that. Suddenly, it hit her. She knew what she would say in her essay. She'd write that after thinking the question over, she would choose to die before she would choose between the three. Lolly felt better. Maybe the different angle would bring her an A. Miss Stone valued thinking outside the box. And two, in this way, Lolly could handle the essay with a little more distance. Luke stared at the blank page and looked back at the clock. Time was steady ticking away. Just pick one and write something. Anything, he fretted. Luke was thinking about using tears when his mind wandered back to what happened at school that day. He'd been sitting in the gym alone during lunch, after deciding it wouldn't hurt to look over his notes for the physics test, when Jan came in looking for Lolly. She sat down with him to call out a few of the questions, for herself as much as for him. Luke and Jan had been close friends forever. He thought about her like another sister. So, he wondered, why couldn't I quit thinking about how pretty she looked today? And why did I go blank? I knew those answers like the back of my hand. It was Jan, for goodness sakes. Now, Susan, on the other hand, that girl had always made his motor run. Luke remembered the feel of the little spark that ran through him when Jan had reached to brush something off his cheek. He decided he was getting the flu. Snap out of it, Luke, he muttered to himself. If you don't watch it, you'll be acting like Jeff. For good measure, Luke decided to choose love instead of tears. He managed to scribble a couple lines about how love was overrated and had caused as much trouble in the world as hate. He was sort of proud of it when he finished. That last line about Samson and Delilah was pure genius.